On Tech News Today, Google snatches a drone company everybody expected Facebook to buy. We've got more details on the Amazon smartphone, and the 4K laptops are here, and they're pretty cheap, too. All that and more coming up next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, April 15th, 2014. Tech News Today is brought to you by RingCentral, the cloud-based phone system we use here at Twit. And it just got better with the launch of Meetings, the full-service video conference feature. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral starts at under $25 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial and buy one desk phone and get a second phone free up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Apple and Android devices are worth at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Mike Elgin.
And I'm Jason Howell.
There we go. And I'm still Mike Elgin. Tech News Today explores the big stories of the day in conversation with some of the world's best journalists. Our guest co-anchor today is Dan Lyons. Dan is marketing fellow at HubSpot and also a blogger. You may also know the real Dan Lyons as the fake Steve Jobs on his former blog, The Secret Diary of Steve Jobs, which he wrote while working as the technology editor at Newsweek. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you for having me, Mike. It's good to be here.
Well, we're very glad you're here, and we got a lot of news to jump into, and so let's get right to it. Google is buying Titan Aerospace. The company makes solar-powered airplane-like drones that can stay in the air for 5 years without landing or refueling. Facebook had been in talks to buy Titan, so Google's announcement comes as something of a surprise. And were you surprised by this, Dan? Because I got the feeling that Google was enamored of balloons rather than airplanes. This just seems like an odd thing for Google to do, to have both balloons and airplanes doing, you know, doing various things like delivering internet connectivity to remote areas.
Well, you know, it's funny. I just finished a story for Newsweek Japan, where I do a lot of writing these days. And it was a cover story about robotics. And the main thrust of the story was that, you know, this big push that Google is making into all of these robotics companies and AI companies. And so in that sense, I wasn't surprised. I mean, it just seems they're just gobbling up everything they can that's even remotely related to drones or robotics or AI. And I don't know how it all fits together. One guy I talked to said his theory is it's just a land grab kind of thing. Google's just out there trying to buy anything that's remotely cool and then figure out what to do with it later. Other people seem to think they have this big master plan and these parts all fit together. But yeah, I think it's – I don't know. I think it's fascinating. I would love to be inside at Google and, you know, finding out what they're really doing. It's amazing to me. What more surprised me is, what was Facebook going to do with this? They were going to use Titan to fly around and deliver internet connectivity, I guess. Is that it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Google and Facebook pretty much have everybody who is in the, you know, already has a computer, already, you know, people like you and me and the people listening, we're all using Google and Facebook. And so they look at the other half of the world that doesn't even have internet connectivity, and they think, wow, there's another three and a half billion more people. And so if we could only get them internet connectivity, you know, imagine they could all be Facebook and Google users. And, you know, the economics of this are extremely favorable. I mean, when Facebook was talking about acquiring this company, the number that was thrown around was $60 million. Google probably got it because they outbid them. So maybe what, $70 million, $80 million, maybe $100
million? Yeah.
That's nothing. Right. I mean, and the company retains its value. So it's not like you lose that money. You exchange money for something that's of that much value, and then you grow the value. So then even if they sell it later, they could probably sell it as a profit. So this is really tiny. And if you look at the amount of money that Facebook has spent buying Instagram and WhatsApp and all these kinds of companies for vastly greater sums, this is really a trivial drop in the bucket. It also is worth pointing out, and you started to mention this about Google and what kind of company it is. Google is really an algorithm company. They're in the business of taking things that are done slowly and arduously and expensively and making them fast, cheap, and automatic by using their algorithm kung fu. And one of the fascinating things that I think is seriously underreported about about Project Loon and probably about these airplanes is that they're algorithmically controlled. So the idea of with Loon, for example, is you have a mesh network in the sky in the super high stratosphere way above where, you know, jetliners fly, that where you have a chain of these things floating around and finding airstreams that are going in the right direction that allow them to more or less hover in the same general area. And that's all algorithmically controlled. There's not a person controlling it. You know, I'm sure there are people monitoring these things, but most of the activity of the rising and falling and the finding of jet streams of these balloons is controlled by similar type software that controls Google search, roughly. So it's a fascinating business. And, you know, the other thing that's worth pointing out is that, so, you know, Titan Aerospace is a company that most of us don't know that much about. It's a two-year-old company. They have 20 employees. Their CEO is Vern Rayburn, who used to run Symantec.
Yeah.
And he was also, for a while, worked at Microsoft's consumer products division. So his experience is primarily in Silicon Valley. And then he worked with another airplane-oriented startup before, and now he's at Titan Aerospace, and soon he'll work at Google. So it's really a fascinating thing. But, you know, again, I think the economics of this, you know, everybody says this is a ridiculous moonshot. I don't think this is ridiculous at all. I think this actually makes a lot of sense.
Well, the interesting thing, too, another theory about what Google is doing, I don't think it applies here, but is about deliveries, that they'll have a self-driving car that can deliver a package to your house, and it's the last 10 feet of e-commerce, walking up to your house with the package, and that the guy who runs iRobot, you know, the Roomba people,
yeah.
His speculation is that Google is buying all these other things, like Boston Dynamics and Shaft and all these other companies, in order to make something that will handle that last trip from the car up to your house. Which seems kind of mundane and kind of boring that, like, you know, after all this, you know, these decades of AI and robotics, you just have something that delivers, you know, a package, you know, to your house. But anyway, I think it's, I'm fascinated by what Google is doing. I think to me, it's the most interesting story in tech right now. They took Andy Rubin off of Android and put him on this, and they're just buying people up, and everybody goes dark. I don't know. I find it just to be, you know, endlessly interesting. So I had just filed that story when the Titan thing was announced yesterday. And so I had to send a note over saying, you know, you might want to add this to the story. I'm not sure if it really fits. Hey, the other thing is they get to take it off the table from Facebook, right? And I think there's some of that between those two companies, right? There's some element of spite of just being able to keep technology away from the other guy.
That's right. Facebook did acquire Ascenta, which is a roughly similar company, but it's a lesser company of lesser value. It's probably worth about a third of what Titan Aerospace is worth. And you had mentioned delivery with self-driving Priuses and stuff. I would totally be behind this if there was a kind of cannon that would shoot the package at your house then the parachute would deploy and it would just like land
on
your porch.
And a net that goes up to catch it.
Oh, man. I would pay anything for that. For that delivery.
Really?
I would love that. Absolutely love it. Of course, it would take
things to other people's houses.
That's right. It'd take one annoying neighbor kid with a BB gun to sort of derail this whole thing. The other thing that has to be mentioned here is that Google, of course, is a purveyor of Google Maps and Google Earth. And, you know, they buy satellite photos from wherever they can get. Project Loon, to a lesser extent, and the Titan Aerospace, to a greater extent, is capable of taking pictures and you know, from a lower, it's not an orbit, but a lower altitude than satellites do. And so you could even imagine, of course, the whole point of these things is to be internet connected. So you could see these things doing double duty, taking satellite photos. You can see them deploying over major cities and major populated areas and actually having satellite pictures that are a few hours old instead of weeks or months or whatever, however old the current pictures are on Google Maps. So that would be a really cool use. I'm not sure if the monetization on that would make sense, but it's certainly possible for these planes to take pictures. I mean, it's already something the company was working on.
And they can stay in the air for like years, right? Isn't that? I think I'd never heard of these guys before, but I read about them. These things can stay up in the air with solar power for huge long amounts of time, right? And they have this incredible range they can keep flying for.
That's right. They have the secret is that they have enormous wings. Their wings are as wide as like a 747, but they're very thin and light airplanes. And the entire surface of the wing is covered with solar panels, so they have a big surface area. They're above the weather, so they don't have to worry about, you know, being overcast and getting less sun. So it's just a fantastic idea all the way around to have these things up there. And you know, this is, it's so sci-fi-ish to the idea of having thousands of kind of self-driving aircraft in the sky for years,
yeah.
Relaying internet connectivity, taking pictures, doing what else they might be doing. But right. it's also a very logical idea. And if you manufacture these at scale, which of course Google would, they probably have, you know, some kind of contract manufacturer in China churning out, you know, one of these a week or 10 of these a week. Who knows? You know, you can produce these pretty quickly. They're probably pretty simple once you have the design. They're probably not that hard to manufacture. You know, I just think this is a great idea, and I think this is going to be a major benefit for Google and their users.
Yeah, I think so too. And you know, you know what I love? I love the fact that Larry Page is doing this. I just think, yeah. I don't know, you know, and not just this, but all these other things too, that he has this vision and this ambition to try to do these crazy things. There was a story today saying that Google tried to do a space elevator and, you know, they couldn't get the materials material science hasn't caught up with the vision yet. But I just think he's an amazing guy that they'll actually give people money to go and try this stuff.
That's what I would do.
Right? Isn't that what you, if you had all that money Absolutely. And you had, you know, you could do anything you wanted. Yeah, it's amazing to me. And we'll figure out a way to make money with it. That's fine. But let's just do cool stuff first. Yeah. And then, you know, we'll monetize it. Yeah, it's an amazing place.
I mean, you can imagine in a couple of years going to Best Buy and seeing and trying Oculus Rift for the first time and saying, you know what, I'm going to buy this. And that's pretty much what Zuckerberg did. He tried yeah. Oculus Rift and said, I'm going to buy this.
Yeah,
anyway,
yeah.
But if you're a billionaire, you buy the whole company, not just the device. Okay, yeah, well, in a sec, we're gonna talk about the latest information about the Amazon smartphone. But first, I want to tell you about RingCentral. RingCentral is a cloud-based phone system, and it's the one that we use here at Twit. And it's a fantastic service that starts at under $25 per month per user. When Leo built the studio here, there was an option to build a PBX-based system, which is the old-fashioned kind of phone system that almost every company used to have, and most companies actually still do have them. They're big, they're expensive, they're cumbersome, they're hard to maintain, and they are sort of yesterday's technology. So Leo wanted to do everything in the cloud, so it was like obvious that we needed to go with RingCentral. Zero startup costs, no PBX hardware to install or maintain, and now RingCentral has launched a service called Meetings. So in addition to everything that's great about RingCentral, they're receiving voicemails through email, they're sending and receiving fax messages from smartphones, which is really great, the auto receptionist, and so on. Now with Meetings, we can host face-to-face meetings in high def and share desktop documents with anyone, anytime, anywhere, on any device. Meetings makes RingCentral the single best solution on the market today. So RingCentral offers all-inclusive pricing under $25 per month per user, and you can start right now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And they have a special offer for listeners of Tech News Today. When you buy one desk phone, you get a second phone free up to 20 phones. So call this number, designated for Tech News Today listeners, 800-543-9980. I'll say that again, 800-543-9980. Or you can go to ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. Well, the Boy Genius Report is providing exclusive pictures of and details about Amazon's rumored smartphone, which is expected to ship later this year. Unfortunately, the pictures, which normally reveal what the phone actually looks like, are less than satisfying because they're covered. It's kind of like in the car industry when you have car spy photos. They cover them with like vinyl things so you can't really see what the car is shaped like. This is the same thing where this phone is covered with a special case that sort of masks what it actually looks like. And this, of course, is a prototype. Dan, you and I haven't talked about this phone concept in general. The main interesting thing that jumps out at you is the fact that it has four cameras on the front that enable you to have 3D vision without goofy glasses. What do you think of this idea?
Yeah, my knee-jerk reaction is, do we need another phone, and do I really want a 3D phone? But that's, you know, the first time I saw 3D TV, I was skeptical, and then I saw it, and I thought, wow, that's amazing. So maybe, you know, when this thing comes out and you look at it, maybe it really will be compelling. I just don't know. It seems gimmicky, right? That, like, if you're going to do a new phone, you need something. So let's do 3D imaging. Although maybe it'll look really cool. It's just very hard for me to say. I'm not particularly excited about it, but
well, the additional information that we learned about this, and again, this is all in the rumor/speculative/ you know, multiple sources, but anonymous sources kind of information. So take it with a grain of salt. But what we've learned is that the four cameras, that enable the 3D. They're all four front-facing cameras, or in fact, infrared cameras. They're not usable as for taking pictures, for example. However, there is a regular camera on the back that, according to this information, could be a 13-megapixel camera. So it basically has the other thing we learned is that there are two phones we're talking about. One is the higher-end phone, which is the rumored phone that we've heard about, and that's been in development for years. The second one would be a low-end phone and much cheaper, which would come out later, probably not even this year, I would guess. And, you know, they have no name for the phone line yet, so we don't know if it's the Amazon Fire smartphone or something like that. We don't know. Has a 4.7-inch screen, low pixel density screen. It's a 720p resolution screen. And it's supposed to have a Qualcomm Snapdragon processor of some kind and 2 gigs of RAM. So it sounds like a pretty ordinary, not that exciting phone that also happens to do 3D. So, you know, it's kind of what you'd expect. It's probably going to be heavily subsidized. It's probably going to be a cash register for buying things on Amazon.
Well, that's what I was saying. I was going to say, what is Amazon's, what are they trying to do here? What's the big picture? There's a new TV box. Now they're going to make phones. I guess I understood Kindle because it sells books. But I guess, maybe, yeah, I mean, are they getting blocked out of selling content or selling goods because people on Android don't buy through Amazon? I don't know. I just don't see what the overall master plan is at Amazon with and how the phones fit into that.
Well, my prediction is that it's going to be optimized for showrooming. So you'll take your phone into a store and, you know, you buy it on Amazon within a brick and mortar store, which is in one sense, a rotten, underhanded thing to do. But on the other hand, it's the wave of the future.
But on the other hand, people do it anyway. So
myself included. Yeah. So,
and, you know, the 3D aspect of this, the more I think about it, and, you know, when you start reading through and see after years of development, it almost seems like, you know, 2 or 3 years ago when 3D was kind of the catchphrase that everybody was, you know, is this the next big thing? Does everything have to have 3D? It's almost like that's when Amazon was getting into the thought of doing a phone. They're like, okay, well, then it obviously has to have 3D. And then they spent 2 to 3 years developing it. Only the problem is we've come out the other end and people just aren't that jazzed about, you know, the 3D aspect of things. Maybe they'll prove that wrong. Maybe they'll create a new paradigm here. But I'll be skeptical until I see it, although I'm curious.
And it'll go with their Amazon netbooks, so... Yeah, that's an interesting point, Jason. That, you know, it's kind of obsolete thinking from the point at which they started doing this.
Right.
And of course, smartphones are all like that to a certain extent. You have to start at, you know, it takes years to get a smartphone to market. So we'll see if it succeeds. On the other hand, I think that there's probably some children's content or some, you know, some unique content or gaming content. And we'll see, you know, it's a wait and see kind of thing. It is an exciting thing. And I think I predicted on Twit. I was a guest on Twit a year and a half ago, and I predicted that Amazon would come out with a line of smartphones because it made a lot of sense to me at the time. Anyway, speaking of high-end hardware, Toshiba unveiled a 4K Ultra HD laptop today. It's called the Satellite P55T, and it's part of a new class of ultra-high-resolution laptop displays we can expect to see coming out over the coming year. And with us to discuss the product and the phenomenon of 4K laptops is Andrew Cunningham, who's a senior products specialist at Ars Technica. Welcome, Andrew.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So is this too much, is this too many pixels here? I mean, 4K, is 4K that close to your face really necessary? Can the human eye even care about this or differentiate that quality of resolution?
I think that it's something that most people probably won't notice, but something that you're seeing in laptops now that kind of mirrors the same resolution race that you saw on smartphones or you have been seeing over the last couple of years is people just keep introducing higher and higher resolution panels without maybe really considering whether the software is caught up to them yet.
Yeah.
I think that would be the biggest thing to watch out for with this 4K laptop and with a lot of the high resolution Windows PCs that are coming out is that Windows desktop apps especially just aren't, you know, the benefit of these displays is that images and text is supposed to be really clear, but if your apps aren't updated to take advantage of it, then everything's still just going to be a blurry mess anyway.
Yeah. Well, Jason and I are both big fans of the Chromebook Pixel, and I did an experiment, I guess it was May of last year, where I used nothing but a Pixel for a month. And at the time, I was using a MacBook Pro, and I used the, you know, high-resolution Pixel. And, man, when I went back to my MacBook Pro, it was just awful.
It's hard to go back.
I was perfectly happy until I – and then you can't go back. So I ended up upgrading to the Pixel MacBook Pro. at great cost. And but you know, I just can't imagine when I look at the Pixel or I look at Retina quality displays, I just think, you know, how much better could it be? This just looks perfect.
Well, the thing about those two laptops, the Chromebook Pixel and then the Retina MacBook Airs, both of them, is that Google and Apple have many, many fewer hardware configurations to deal with. And so the way that they've implemented this, you know, the pixel doubling, I guess, that you need to make these windows sharp is much simpler. Like in OS X, windows are either 2 times normal size or they're normal size. Like developers only need to deal with those two things. And it's really easy to you know, switch from one to the other. With Windows, it's basically up to the user. Like you can have things normal size, 125% of normal size, 150%, 200%, and it just goes on and on. And, you know, up until about a year ago, there was really no reason for developers to worry about this at all because they were not, I mean, they weren't settings that anybody used. So, these things still have such a small chunk of the market at this point that application developers are still kind of playing catch up.
Yeah, and this is not a mass market laptop. It's designed for creative professionals, even though it starts at $1,500, which is not an enormous financial burden, but it's one of the first laptops, according to Toshiba, to earn the Technicolor color certification. So we can expect that the color fidelity on the screen is very, very accurate to what, you know, your photographs display and so on. So just quickly going down the specs, it's a 15.6-inch screen, Ultra HD TrueByte technology screen, native resolution of 3840 by 2160, which adds up to 282 pixels per inch. And it comes with Adobe Photoshop Lightroom 5 software. So this is clearly aimed at a certain type of user.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And now, is there how much of a performance? You guys do a lot of testing. How much of a performance hit do you take with a super high resolution screen like this? Would this be significantly faster if it had a slightly lower resolution screen?
Not significantly anymore. With the last few generations of graphics processors, Intel and AMD and NVIDIA and the companies who do these things have really focused on 4K capability and making performance good. So if you're just doing like basic desktop things or if you're working in an image editor or something, you're not going to see, I don't think, that big of a performance hit. The bigger performance hit would come from gaming because obviously when your graphics processor has to push like 4 times the pixels that it would in a normal display, that's going to impact performance a little bit. But, you know, like you said, this is aimed more at photography professionals, video professionals, because it does have that Blu-ray writer. I don't think Toshiba really cares that much if gamers like it or not.
So the big question, I guess, is what's next? We're going to have 8K laptops? I mean, or are we just going to stop at 4K and say that's as high as we go?
You know, I'm not sure about that. I am excited, you know, whenever displays get higher resolution, whenever the color gets better, whenever the viewing angles get better, I get really excited about that. But that's just one direction that things are moving. You know, you also see laptops getting thinner and smaller, and you see tablets that have the guts of an entire laptop in them. So I think that the PC makers are really just trying a bunch of different things and trying to reverse some of those negative sales trends that they've been seeing over the last couple of years.
Yeah. All right, Andrew. Well, I want to thank you for coming on at extremely short notice to tell us about this trend and this product. And it's all very interesting. And I really enjoy your work at Ars Technica.
Oh, thank you. Well, thanks for having me.
All right. Well, thanks again. And you can find Andrew at ArsTechnica.com, of course, and on Twitter at Andrew Writes. Well, the FBI is building a giant face recognition database. The Electronic Frontier Foundation has obtained documents through the Freedom of Information Act that show the FBI's intent to have 52 million photos in the database. This is up from 16 million last year. So they're quickly ramping up the number of pictures that they have in their database. Dan, does this concern you, this general trend of the buildup of databases of biometric information like this?
Yeah, and the whole thing does that. You know, it's starting with the NSA, and I do feel like, you know, remember a long time ago, Scott McNeely said, "There is no privacy. Get over it." And everybody thought he was, you know, being obnoxious or whatever. But I feel like, God, he was prescient. He was right. You know, there really is none. And I admire the EFF for you know, making a stink about it or raising awareness about it. But I don't know if there's any turning back. Do you? I think it's kind of, this is the world we're going to live in. We're going to live in the panopticon where everything is watched and everything is available. There's no privacy anymore.
That's right. And what goes with that is an increasing gradual acceptance as people, you know, they're offended and then they sort of get used to it. And then there's a new outrage and then they get used to that. And, you know, that's how we slouch toward this world where surveillance and biometric surveillance is total. And we end up with Minority Report where you walk through, you know, the mall and say, you know, welcome to the Gap, Mr., you know, Yakamoto. So, you know, that's one aspect of it. The other creeping slippery slope here is the acceptance of biometric data collection on non-criminals and people who aren't even suspected. So, for example, the EFF discovered that the FBI database already includes 4.3 million images that were obtained for, quote, non-criminal purposes, unquote. And these are probably, they speculated that these are probably photos sent to the FBI for background checks. So you're going to do, you know, you're going to get a job with a contractor that may have, you know, a contract with the Pentagon or something. You have to do an FBI background check. So you have to submit a photo. And then the FBI apparently, possibly, is scanning that photo and putting it into their face recognition database.
And keeping it for down the road for who knows what, who knows why they might need it, right?
Yeah. That's right. And it's
maybe we need it someday. Yeah, exactly.
So it's quite an interesting story. And I appreciate, you know, again, they're not going to come forward and volunteer this information. This required, you know, the Freedom of Information Act, which is basically a law that says that after a certain period of time, if the government has information, that a journalist or somebody can request that information and they have to provide it even if they don't want to. And this is the kind of information they don't want to provide because they know that this is sensitive in the public eye, but it's great that the EFF is working on this. So the EFF is actually doing some good investigative journalism, and that's something that's sorely lacking these days. So I'm glad they're doing it.
Yeah, they're a fantastic organization. I love those guys. And they're willing to take these unpopular stands. I mean, this one is not really an example, but they'll stand up to Facebook or they'll stand up to people when you know, when it's not really popular or easy for them to do. I admire that about them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in a sec, we're going to talk about another face recognition story. But first, I want to tell you about Gazelle. Gazelle will buy your used gadgets and give you good money for them, too. I've always been amazed at how much money they're willing to pay for my old pieces of junk that I have lying around. The way you use Gazelle is you simply go to gazelle.com, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. You find your item in there. If you got an iPhone or a Samsung phone or something like that, you find the specific make and model. You say what condition it's in, good, flawless, broken, cracked, whatever. They often even buy broken phones, which is amazing. And then they'll give you a price. And you know, maybe it's $150, maybe it's $350. It depends on how new the phone is, what its monetary value is, and so on. And then they take it off your hands. It's super easy. They send you a box with a sticker inside. You put your phone in the box. You put the sticker on the outside. You put it in the mail, and off it goes. And then you get paid. They pay you by check, by using PayPal, or you can get an extra 5% if you use the Amazon gift card option, which I recommend. It's a great idea. They'll wipe your data for free. So if you have personal data on their phone, they will erase it in a way that will make it unrecoverable, which is absolutely fantastic. Gazelle's paid more than $100 million to over 700,000 customers. And, you know, that phone that you have sitting around in a drawer is not doing anybody any good, and it can make you some money. So you need to send it into gazelle.com. So find out what your Apple or Android device is worth. Take a minute, go to gazelle.com to find out, because, you know, you got to do it now because your device may lose value the longer you wait. Well, the first Project Ara developer conference has already begun. It's streaming live on YouTube. And Jason, if you can throw that live video, this is a conference is essentially happening online. And Project Ara, of course, is Google's radical phone platform that enables the building of custom phones by snapping together interlocking modules. It's like smartphone meets Lego. So the developers are both hardware hackers and software coders. And Project Ara, of course, was part of Motorola, but will remain part of Google when most of the Motorola mobility handset business is sold to Lenovo. So this is another awesome move that Google is making to have these kind of moonshot things. I really, when I first heard about Project Ara, I thought, you know, come on, give me a break. There's just no way you're going to have these little modules and you have this clunky, blocky brick of a phone with all these, you know, awkward, you know, phones are so sleekly designed now with no spaces inside, and they use glue and, you know, all this kind of stuff to make them sleek and light and so on. And here Google's proposing this thing that looks like the Partridge Family bus. And, you know, it's but the more I look at it, the more exciting it is. And a lot of people have pointed out, you know, this, you know, we call these things smartphones, but they don't have to be phones. They could be anything. This is like a maker's dream. What do you think about this, Dan?
No, I agree. And I had the same reaction, like, oh, my God, yeah. But see, I'm a huge fan of open source. I have been for a long time. And I feel like, you know, by throwing stuff open like this, you don't know what's going to come out of it. You don't know what someone's going to come up with. But if you turn loose thousands of minds on a problem, you know, things are going to happen that you couldn't have predicted or even couldn't even have asked for. So, yeah, I love stuff like this. It's the reason I always liked Android. I always thought Android was just such a cool idea that there was, you know, somewhat of an open source product, project. But yeah, I know. I think it's good things are going to come of that. I don't know if I'll, like you say, I don't know if I want one of those Partridge Family bus phones, but who knows? Maybe there'll be something amazing that springs from it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, with Moore's Law and the sort of, I guess, the mobile computing equivalent where everything just keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller, we could see a point at which a Project Ara phone is actually very small, smaller than today's phones, and that would be an acceptable thing to carry around, especially if you had all these modules you could buy that did amazing things. You know,
or if you could update your phone without having to go buy a whole new phone, just rip out one part of it and put in a new processor, right? And not have to destroy your phone every year or two when you buy a new one. That would be cool.
Exactly. That would be fantastic. Yeah. Or you could share a phone and you just swap out your own personal module and put in the other person's module that has their own custom features. You know, it's like you said, you don't know what's going to happen because this is all going to be based on what people do with it when they get creative and build their own stuff. So that's the exciting part.
Have you ever had this experience where there's a phone you like and you like everything about it except the camera sucks and you really wish you could get the camera from this other phone? You don't really want that other phone, but that camera would be really good. If you could take the camera from the new Samsung S5 and put it into the HTC One or whatever, that's what I think is interesting. You can customize and make a phone that you would like, you know, that has the features you want, and you don't spend money on the things you don't want. That potentially is an interesting application too.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. And even you can even have a phone that has the regular camera in it, and then when you're going to want to take a picture, you just put in the 50-megapixel module, and now you've got this amazing camera. Or maybe the module that has the gnarly lens on it or something like that, or you can swap it.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. The possibilities are truly endless. So it's very exciting development, and I'm glad they're having these developer conferences because this is going to stimulate all kinds of creative projects. Well, taking its cue from the dystopian Wi-Fi and also the FBI, NEC has launched a new product called the Mobile Facial Recognition Appliance. It's designed for retail stores, and the device is a box that connects to any closed-circuit video system, including a security video system. It captures faces on camera, then sends the pictures off to a server for remote processing, beaming the identity of the person in the picture back to store employees so they can greet customers by name and freak them the F out. So
exactly.
this is the future happening. You see this in science fiction. We mentioned Minority Report when we talk about the FBI's face recognition. This is an appliance. You just buy it. If you're Macy's, you just buy this appliance, plug it into your closed circuit system, and now you know who everybody is.
And this is the flip side of the FBI thing, right? That on one hand, this technology is creepy and scary and potentially dangerous. But then there's this stuff that, you know, the Robert Scoble and Shetlers we have been talking about with the age of context where, you know, it's kind of cool if you could go into a store and they knew who you were and maybe gave you a special that was tailored to your interests. I mean, I can see how in some ways this is really could be a magical experience and really, really neat. So I don't think it's all bad either. And in fact, the only way to get to that age of context and that age where stores really know you is probably through some kind of automation and some kind of identity recognition or some way of knowing who you are when you walk in a store, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And again, people have demonstrated that they are very willing to give up their privacy if there's some small benefit. You know, if they can save $5 on something, they'll give up their, you know, biometric security forever. And that's just the human nature. It's impossible for us to imagine what could go wrong. And it's easy for us to imagine that we'd like to save $5 on whatever it is we're buying. So, you know, that's just human nature. This is going to happen. And NEC is, you know, stepping up and saying, you know, forget about it, man. Let's just do this. Let's do this thing.
Well, there's already iBeacon, right? The Apple technology that's going to be able to tell who you are by recognizing your phone when you walk into a store. So it won't have a facial picture of you, but it'll know who you are anyway. But there's all sorts of attempts to try to know more about who you are as you're walking down the street or as you walk into a mall or into a store, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And of course, they can always, you know, customize every experience that way. Well, Dan, I want to thank you for joining
thank
us
you.
On Tech News today. It goes by quickly. And again, I really appreciate your insights on all this stuff. Where can people find your work if they want to read up on what you're doing?
Oh, I put everything. I guess Twitter is easy. At Real Dan Lyons on Twitter is probably the easiest way to find me. Yeah.
OK, fantastic. Yeah. Well, thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks. Nice
all right. Well, we've got a Google Plus community, and we just passed 2,000 members. We just launched it a couple of months ago, and already we've got 2,000 members. We want to see how fast we can get to 3,000 members. So if you're on Google Plus, and if you're not, you should be, join our community. We're having a lot of fun in that community talking about technology news. We've got a lot of really smart people there, so come join the community. You can find that by searching the Google Plus community section for Tech News Today. It's really easy to do. You can also subscribe to our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com, and we want to hear from you. Tell us what's on your mind. Leave us voicemail by calling 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can also send us email at tnt@twit.tv. Also, don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.